Working Cows Podcast, Bonus Episode 2.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
This episode has been brought to you by Chris Williams Audio. Check out his website at chriswilliamsaudio.com. For the last 11 years or so, I've been talking for a living. I've gained some skills in talking. I can form a sentence. I can think on my feet. I can respond to questions. I can come up with new questions. All that time developing my speaking craft has not left me a lot of time to figure out how to make audio sound great. If you're a musician, podcaster, or filmmaker, making your product sound great is crucial. So you stick to what you know, and let Chris Williams stick to what he knows, making your product sound great. Head on over to chriswilliamsaudio.com for all your podcasting, music production, and film audio needs. Hey everybody, we're back with another bonus episode. My name's Clay Connery. I am your host of the Working Cows Podcast. I had the opportunity recently to sit down with another one of the Grassland Coalition featured producers for the South Dakota Grassland Coalition's Grassland Planner. It is a calendar and a whole lot more. If you've missed the previous episodes and you want to know a little bit more about the Grassland Planner, you can check out workingcows.net/16 for my interview with the director of the South Dakota Grassland Coalition, Jim Falstick. Today I am talking with Chad Schooley, a producer from Castlewood, South Dakota, who has some interesting perspectives to share on their production, the different enterprises in their production, and how they are not only concerned about their own benefit, but how what they're doing on their land is benefiting people downstream from them, and some different things like that. I would also encourage you to check out the show notes page for this episode, workingcows.net/grassland3. As in South Dakota Grassland Coalition, workingcows.net/grassland3. We will have some notes up there with a link to the video from the South Dakota Grassland Coalition that was produced for the Our Amazing Grasslands series. So check that out. Chad, thank you for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast. I would like to give you an opportunity to introduce yourself and share a little bit about what you do on your operation and some of the history of the operation and how all the things have come together to make the operation what it is.
My name is Chad Schooley. I started farming in 1991. I went to Lake Area Vocational School in Watertown, and I have a degree in ag business and a degree in ag production. I started farming with my dad, my uncle, and my cousin, mainly grain farming at that point, plus we ran a feedlot. Did not get into a cow herd till the mid-90s, and then that's when I started purchasing some land, and we converted a quarter from tillable into grass. That was my first quarter of grass that I acquired. Then we started building our cow herd, and we still run a cow herd plus a feedlot and grain farm. We run about 200 head of mama cows, and we run a 800 head capacity feedlot at Castlewood.
Very good. Appreciate you giving us a little bit of the background there. You were the subject of this year's March month of March in the South Dakota Grassland Planner, and then also the Our Amazing Grasslands video that was just released here in March as well. And in that, you talked a little bit about transitioning from some of these croplands back to grass. And what was involved in that process? How did you choose those places that you put back into grass and some of those things?
Well, we converted some marginable tillable ground back into grass. And with that process, we did a U.S. Fish and Wildlife grassland easement. So they got some cost share there, which enabled us to get it planted and fenced. And it's been very good. I converted another quarter 3 years ago that I actually rent, and talked to the landlord about it, and he had no problem with it. So we converted another one, and we went through EQIP with a prairie pothole program, and it had to do with restoring grass in the prairie pothole area. So was able to get some cost share on planting of the grass and the fencing again.
Sure. So I'd like to dive in a little bit more on the marginal tillable land. What was the history of that quarter, did you say? What was the history of that quarter?
History was we'd been farming it, and it's got some rolling hills and some draws. And when I say marginal, at that time, if we were raising 150 bushel corn on our good ground, we were probably raising 100 bushel corn on this ground. If we were raising 40 bushel beans, this was probably 25 bushel beans. You know, it just wasn't as productive in a row crop type situation, I guess, is how I would have to explain it. And I wanted to have cows. I wanted to have a cow herd. And in eastern South Dakota, where we're at, there's not much grass. Everything that can be is corn and beans and wheat. So not a lot of grass available.
Sure. Yeah, and so this ground that you put back into grass, what was that process like? What was involved in taking those pieces of land from tillable acres back into grass?
It was pretty much a two-year project. We planted it. We planted a warm season native grass mix of Indian switch, big blue stem, and western wheat. So I don't know how familiar you are with the natives, but they're tough grass to get started. So we did not graze it at all the first year. The second year, I think we hayed it. Lightly mid-season, we had hayed it, and we didn't put cattle on it till the third year.
Sure. That makes sense. What were some of the motivations for the mix of grass that you chose? You said that they're difficult to get started.
My NRCS conservation guy helped me with the mix, and I guess that's where I got it from, and I've been very satisfied with it. The calves coming off there seem to be maybe a little bit heavier, a little bit better than the ones coming off our other grasses. I mean, I can't prove that, but it sure seems like the weights are a little bit better, and it's been a good experience.
And what are some of those other grasses that you are running on that were there already?
The other pasture that I converted is got six paddocks in it. We mix the paddocks up, actually. So we have some cool season grasses in some of the paddocks and warm season grasses in the other ones, because we're using that as a not a calving pasture, but that's where we're bringing pears out early in the spring to get them out of our calving pastures to give us more room there. So we wanted some cool seasons that would get started right away. And then we finish the summer up with the warm seasons, and we rotate back and forth, but it seems to work pretty good also.
Sure. And what about the grasses that are available, you know, kind of generally around you? You said not there isn't much grass there, but are some of the grasses that you planted in some of the same grasses that are available in places that haven't been tilled?
Yeah, I have one native pasture that hasn't been tilled, had never been tilled, and that's got warm season grasses. There's quite a mix out there. You know, it's native, so there's quite a few different grasses. But most of the tame pastures are cool season grasses, a lot of bromes and stuff like that that just don't last all season.
And you mentioned that you wanted to start a cow herd. So was the cow herd not part of the enterprise mix on the farm before you started this process of seeding some of these places back to grass?
Nope, at that time, the little bit of grass we had, we ran some breeding heifers on and maybe some yearlings, but we had never had a cow herd.
And were those yours, your heifers, or you were taking in some outside cattle?
Those were that we'd taken in from outside.
So how would you say that the performance of those acres has compared as far as what you're able to do on them, economically speaking, with the cows compared to what you were doing on some of that marginal land with the crop?
Well, I think it was probably a wash at one point. And then came along the $7 corn and the $14 beans. And at that point, it would have been better off in grain. But now things have stabilized. I still think we do a pretty good job with the cattle. And it's a part of the operation that I enjoy. And that's why I did it. You know, not everything is financial. I mean, that's a big part of it. But there comes a point when you got to do what you want to do also.
And also something that you mentioned more than once in the video that will be linked at workingcows.net/grassland3. This is my third interview with a grassland producer. I guess it is the third month of the year, so that would make sense. But workingcows.net/grassland3 will be the link for this episode, and the video will be up there for people to watch. But one of the things that you mentioned in that video a couple of times is the future generations. And do you see this as part of the strategy, the seeding it back to grass, as part of the strategy for the long-term health of that land and ensuring it is profitable into future generations?
You know, I have a 15-year-old son and a 13-year-old son and a 9-year-old daughter, and my 15-year-old has the bug really bad. He's, I'm afraid, born and bred farmer, rancher, enjoys the cattle, and I think that's where he's going to pursue.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's a good place for him to start at, and the old cow herd is just it's a pretty steady source of income. It's a little more work than just grain farming, but if you enjoy what you're doing, that's what it's all about.
Absolutely. What benefits have the cows brought to the land that is being farmed? Are you guys grazing out on any of the residue there or anything like that?
Yes, we do a lot of aftermath grazing. We do a lot of cover crops. We run corn stalks. The cows are actually out on corn stalks yet today. Mm. We're feeding out there, but they spend all day out cruising around looking for a ear of corn or a stalk to chew on. And we had, I think, 240 acres of cover crops this year that we grazed, and we're scheduled to have a couple hundred again next year. It just stretches our grazing. It allows us to stock a little bit heavier, run a few more numbers with the theory that we're going to have them off early and have them on another source of feed.
So just one practical question about grazing aftermath, specifically corn stalks. Do you notice any lameness issues, or has that been somewhat mitigated through your use of cover crops? Are you, I'm assuming you're using some cover crops on those corn acres?
The cover crops usually come after our small grain.
Okay.
So the corn stalks are just straight corn stalks, but we haven't had any issues with lame cattle or anything.
Well, it's just something that we've seen as we've grazed corn stalks a couple of different times that it seems like it's a little bit rougher ground and a little bit more of a challenge for them, and I didn't know if there was other people experiencing those issues or not.
Yeah, I guess I can't say that we have.
And you guys are seeing that as a value-added enterprise where the cows are coming in and grazing those and they're doing something positive for those row crop acres. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And I don't know so much the aftergrass grazing on the corn stalks, but cover crops, to get them on the ground, I can truly say I've seen the difference on what that does for the ground.
Where are those cover crops being planted then?
They're being planted after small grain, late July, early August, and then grazed late September through snow cover.
What is your cover crop mix? What are you using for your cover crops, the actual?
Oh, it varies year to year, but most years we have some turnips, radishes, rapeseed. We've done sunflowers. We've done oats. I mean, it gets mixed up a little bit every year. Also, what you're trying to do for the ground, you know, so there's mixes that are up to 13 different species. There's it's quite a diverse project.
Yeah, sounds awesome. I'm not a farmer, so I'm not familiar with a lot of these things. I mean, I'm obviously familiar with cover crops and some of those different strategies, but how do you decide? How do you go about deciding which cover crop you're going to use in a given year? You said that depends on what you're trying to do for the ground.
There again, we get a lot of help from NRCS. We have a super conservation district. Our NRCS conservationist is Jim Dilla. He's at Hamlin and Connington County. He's very knowledgeable. He helps me with a lot of my plans. Some of the seed companies, Milbourne Seed out of Brookings, helps me with different varieties and stuff. So I'm far from a agronomist or anything else. So I look for help.
And you're determining what that land needs based on a soil test. Is that correct? Or what are some of those things that you're using?
Yeah, the soil tests help. You know, we're trying to build our organic matter up and stuff. But if you got compaction issues, there's a couple different, you know, there's a radish, they call it a tillage radish that helps with that. And it's just different things.
Very good. Well, we're talking with Chad Schooley today about his strategy for grazing and using cows to impact the land in a profitable way, and talking about the cover crops and some of those things. We're going to take a quick break and thank our sponsors, and we'll be right back for more with Chad Schooley. The High Plains Ranch Practicum is an invaluable resource. I cannot stress highly enough how much I think it is important for producers to be involved in continuing education programs. So go check out the High Plains Ranch Practicum at hpranchpracticum.com and register. The class that I was a part of sold out before the deadline, and so the deadline is the end of May. But go ahead and register early and make plans to be a part of this. Just a great format for continuing education for ranchers. hpranchpracticum.com, our newest sponsor on the Working Cows podcast. We are back with Chad Schooley. We are talking about his operation in eastern South Dakota and about some of the different things that they are doing there with cover crops, and a video that was produced based on their operation will be linked at workingcows.net/grassland3. Grassland and the number 3 will be the link for this bonus episode of the Working Cows podcast. And in that video, a couple of different times, Chad mentions his strategy of planting tree belts and planting in riparian areas. So could you just talk a little bit about what you guys have done in some of the riparian areas as far as planting is concerned, tree belts is concerned?
We have 3 different locations that we have did riparian buffers around draws, waterways, and, you know, the video we talked about clean water and doing things right for people downstream. A lot of it has to do with my personal preference of it also, and that's hunting. Me and my boys are all avid archery hunters, and we like to deer hunt and build habitat. We do some food plots, and the cover crops work as good food plots. So, but the riparian buffers are, you know, they're not real old. I suppose our oldest one is 6 or 7 years that you see in the video. You can see the dogwoods and some of the other. There again, Jim Dilla and NRCS helped pick out the different native plants and stuff that would work best around there. And it's been enjoyable to work with them and see the trees come and get to go hunt a pheasant out there or chase a deer or so.
Yeah, a lot of our personal conservation of our land will end up benefiting other people, but also it benefits wildlife and it makes a better, more attractive habitat for wildlife and some of those things. It's always interesting to me how many times in the course of this podcast and the episodes that I've recorded for it that the wildlife comes up as something that we are excited to see them taking advantage of some of the things that we are doing, and that wildlife can be a good indication for us that we're doing something right on our land. Do you have any thoughts about that?
No, I think you covered it well. It's family time, and it's just things we enjoy.
One thing that did pique my interest there is you said that, you know, really it's about doing the right thing and doing something for people downstream. What are some of the benefits that you see as part of what you guys are doing for the folks downstream?
Well, we're filtering that water before it gets to the Big Sioux River, which runs into all the way to Sioux Falls, and it runs all the way to Missouri, but it runs down to Sioux Falls, Brookings. Sioux Falls, the Big Sioux, is one of their main water sources, so they're adamant about keeping their water source clean, and we're doing what we can to help.
Yeah, you said in the video that the Sioux Rural Water System, is that right, is your system?
Yep, that's correct.
And that it has some of the cleanest water anywhere? Was there a test that was done that showed that?
Yeah, they've gotten several awards, state awards, for their drinking water and their system on how clean it is. And I don't know exactly what they all are, but I know they've been recognized several times for their water system.
And at least a part of that is the producers upstream that are taking care of those waterways that end up flowing into that drinking water system. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Their pump site at Castlewood is located just outside of town, and they purchased 60 acres from my dad and 160 acres from a neighbor, and they have put it all into grass and, you know, and used it basically as a big filter strip. Some of their other pump sites were right in fields where people were raising crops and stuff, and the nitrate levels were getting so high that it was costing so much to filter out the nitrates that they went looking for a different site with better water.
That's very interesting. Was that a result, the nitrate levels, is that a result of the use of commercial fertilizers?
You know, I would guess. I can't say that completely, but I would guess that had a lot to do with commercial fertilizer usage.
Yeah, that was something that you mentioned in the course of that video, that was maybe had something to do with that. And have you guys seen that use of commercial fertilizer reduced on your place as a result of using cover crops and some of those things?
Oh, I don't know if I could say that yet, but it's getting there. I think we're cutting back, but I have no statistics or anything that says that.
But as far as clean waterways and different things like that, the buffer strips that you have done around those riparian areas, and then also it sounds like the planting some of those places around the pump site back into grass is a big part of the strategy for clean water.
Absolutely.
That's a very interesting thing. You know, I don't think that we often think about the water in our country. You know, there's maybe the majority of the third world that is struggling to find clean water, but for however long it's been in our country, it's just you turn on the tap and you've got decent water to drink, and a lot of that is thanks to producers like yourself that are managing their properties upstream in a way that is beneficial for cleaning up the water. And I think that's another reason why producers are a key part of not just providing food, but also providing clean water.
Yes.
Anything else that you would like to cover today? Anything related to the video or the South Dakota Grassland Coalition? What has their influence been on you as far as producer is concerned?
It's all been good. We're getting some good publicity with the grasslands and the new soil health coalition. So it's all been good. They're good programs, and as far as what's going on back here, we're calving heifers and getting things ready to go for another year, so I guess that's all about it from this end.
Gotcha. What does it mean to you as a producer and a steward of the land to be featured in the Grassland Planner?
Oh, it was quite a privilege, quite an honor.
Yeah, very, very cool. And it's a very well-produced calendar and video. And as one of the previous producers that I interviewed said, it was even more of an honor this year because the focus is on the people and how the people are positively impacting the land. So I just would like to say congratulations on being featured and well done. Thank you for what you're doing for soil health and I think on some level, ambassadorship for the agricultural industry as a whole.
Thank you very much.
Well, Chad, I appreciate your time today. And any other recommendations? You mentioned Natural Resource Conservation Service a couple of times. Any other resources that have been helpful to you in this journey?
U.S. Fish and Wildlife, Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants Forever, they've all been good partners.
Can you tell me a little bit more about, that's the first time I've heard them mention Ducks Unlimited and Pheasants Forever. Can you tell me just a little bit about their influence and what they've done as far as partnership?
They partnership with U.S. Fish and Wildlife on the grassland easements and help with the cost share for the cross fencing and the water systems and some more of that stuff. So
that's interesting. It goes back to making an attractive habitat for wildlife and those wildlife being another indication that some of what we're doing on our land is a good thing, not just for our cows or our crops, but for nature as a whole. So, Chad, thank you for your time today, and I look forward to releasing this episode and sharing it with everybody else.
All right. Thank you. Have a good day.
This episode has been brought to you by Kamak Ranch Supply. Check out their website at kamakranchsupply.com. Here's the deal about Kamak Ranch Supply. When you call and ask them about a product, there's no blank pause on the other end of the line because they don't understand the product that you just asked them about. If they are selling it, they understand it because they are producers, and Gary Kamak himself, the owner of Kamak Ranch Supply, is a producer. So if you want answers about the products you're calling to ask about from producers, call Kamak Ranch Supply or check out their website at kamakranchsupply.com. Very good stuff there with Chad Schooley. Just a really neat opportunity to sit down with him and listen to some of the way he's thinking about different things, about water quality downstream, about habitat for him and his boys to enjoy together, and just about how they are going about the whole entire business aspect of it, that it's about what you enjoy to do as much as it is anything else.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.